Michael B. Jordan's played a lot of different types over the years. Sympathetic figures like Wallace on the Wire and Oscar Grant in Fruitvale Station, an underdog in the Creed movies, a swaggering antagonist in Black Panther. But this marks a new era in the makings of MBJ. Action star.
The movie Without Remorse is the John T. Clarke origin story. It follows the soon-to-retire Navy SEAL character as he kicks butt and takes names in order to avenge the murder of his pregnant wife. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Aisha Harris. And today we're talking about Tom Clancy's Without Remorse on Pop Culture Happy Hour at NPR. Here with me and Stephen from his home in Washington, D.C. is writer Chris Klimek. Welcome back, Chris.
Hi. Thank you, Aisha. I am a Stefano Sulima completist, so I want to wish everyone a happy Day of the Soldado. Keep wearing your mask, and we'll celebrate together next year.
Lovely. I'm so glad we booked you for this. And joining us from her home in Brooklyn is Daisy Rosario. She's an executive producer at Stitcher with the show Celebrity Book Club with Chelsea Devantes. It's in its first season right now. Welcome back to you too, Daisy.
Hey, thanks for having me, Aisha.
So Without Remorse is based on Tom Clancy's best-selling 1993 novel of the same name and serves as the origin story for John Clarke, an ex-Navy SEAL turned CIA operative. It's directed by Italian filmmaker Stefano Sulima and stars Michael B. Jordan as John. Jamie Bell plays Robert Ritter, a CIA agent. Jodie Turner-Smith is Karen Greer, John's lieutenant commander. And Guy Pearce is Thomas Clay, the Secretary of Defense. The movie's story makes some notable departures from the book. While Clancy's novel was set in 1970 against the backdrop of the Vietnam conflict, this version is set in the present day and casts Russians as the adversaries. And Jordan is the first non-white actor to play John on screen. Clancy originally conceived the character as an Irish Catholic, and he was previously portrayed by Willem Dafoe and Liev Schreiber. I don't think it's a spoiler or a surprise to note that by the end of Without Remorse, it's clear that the filmmakers have every intent of telling more John Clarke stories in the future, so it seems we'll likely be seeing Jordan in this role again. Stephen, what are your initial thoughts on his action hero chops?
Well, I guess I want to preface this by saying Tom Hardy has a very nice face. And yet, Tom Hardy, in movie after movie after movie, insisted on covering his very nice face with masks. He was Bane in a Batman movie. He was in the Mad Max movie with like a grill over his mouth. He was in Dunkirk with a fighter pilot mask on. And you'd ask after a while, why is Tom Hardy covering his beautiful, beautiful face? And I felt that way a little bit watching Michael B. Jordan in this, but instead of the face, it's his charm. Michael B. Jordan has an enormous, electric reserve of charm that slips out in little tiny doses early in this movie and then is completely muted as he turns into a completely generic action star in a completely generic action movie. I had several moments in this film where I felt a deep sense of deja vu. Like, I feel like I've watched this exact scene before. And then I realized I'd seen every scene before. Endless fight scenes that seem to be taking place behind a dust storm, so you can't tell what's going on. I was frustrated by it because this is a film with a very, very, very good cast, given a completely generic script shot in a completely generic way.
I wonder how much of that is just Tom Clancy. That world has already been done so many times on film. So it's like, you know, we're rebooting the story that is already almost 30 years old. And granted, it's a very different story from the original, but I can understand your frustration with the lack of MBJ charm. Tom Hardy, I think, actually was originally supposed to be in this role.
What?
But he wanted to wear a mask and they wouldn't let him.
Yeah, at least that was one of the reports I saw like way back like years ago when it was announced. Right. So interesting that you mentioned Tom Hardy. Daisy, how do you feel about Without Remorse and the Michael B. Jordan of it all?
Yeah, well, I mean, before I fully get into that, I just need to acknowledge that it's amazing to have somebody else reference Tom Hardy when Glenn's not here. So thank you for that, Stephen. It's one of my favorite tangents that Glenn and I have been able to go on. But I mean, I would agree with that. My overall reaction to the movie was just, I kept going, I literally was saying this out loud just to my cat. And I was like, it's Clancy. Like, it just is, right? Like, it just, like you said, it's like, there are these very, you know, common plot points. It is like a conspiracy that leads to a conspiracy. I mean, with the Michael B. Jordan thing, you know, I agree with your point about his charm, Stephen. I think he's got this charm. And I think that's part of what really, really works in the Creed movies. He's playing this action person in the sense that boxing and sports is action in its own way. And there's all this going on, but you still get to see his charm. Whereas in this movie, he is a traditional Clancy character. I think if you're hoping for something more because it is Michael B. Jordan and because it is this cast, you're not going to quite get that, but not, I don't see that as really a detriment of those people. Right. I think, you know, they all showed up and they did the work. I think it's just the combination is like not the most compelling combination. But if you are in the mood for a Tom Clancy movie, you will also have that itch scratched.
Yeah, trademark that. It's Clancy.
It's Clancy.
Chris, how about you?
Boy, nothing is more boring than consensus. But yeah, I mean, this is a thoroughly middling entry in a genre that I like very much when it's done well. I'm going to say if you're in the mood for a Clancy, go back and watch The Hunt for Red October from 1990, because, I mean, that was the start of all of these, you know, endless adaptations. It's still the one that stands out as the most distinct because the Jack Ryan character is played in that movie only by Alec Baldwin, is not invulnerable. You know, he is a bookish CIA analyst who is not used to being in the field. The environment of submarines distinguishes it somewhat. It's one of Sean Connery's last great movie star performances. The only thing that distinguishes this Without Remorse, and I don't want to minimize this, is the casting of Michael B. Jordan and Jodie Turner-Smith. I mean, having two black leads in a, you know, long-established action franchise like this, that's very important and significant. I mean, I wish the rest of the movie around it were better. You know, this is Michael B. Jordan's absolute coronation as a star. You know, you reach the point that he has in his career and you get put up for everything, whether it's, you know, Batman or whoever. And, you know, you understand why a movie star would want to have a reliable thing like this in their back pocket, because they can make 4 or 10 more of these. But as you all have said, I mean, he does not get to show us even a tenth of what he can do in this movie. He certainly has the physicality, the athleticism. He's very impressive in the fight scenes. But, you know, consider something like John Wick, right, where Keanu Reeves is playing a very similar character, a widower who kills 100 people. We still get to see a little bit of Keanu's quirky charm in those movies. You know, there's still some playfulness. Yeah, that is all flattened out here. My favorite piece of casting, though, Jodie Turner-Smith. I love her.
Yes.
This is a bit of a departure from reality because we have not had any women Navy SEALs yet. I looked this up right before we started taping, but it's going to happen. I am perfectly fine with that departure from reality. She is awesome. I love her. I love the dynamic between them. But that's really the only thing that is at all distinctive about this movie for me, is that relationship between those two.
I'm so glad you mentioned her, because to me, she was also the standout. She just has this way about her. She's just a very striking figure to begin with. Mm-hmm. And her hair is cut very, very short. So it's not like the femme but tough thing. It's very,
she's
like
not taking off the helmet to reveal a mane of hair.
Exactly. There's none of that. She is just very, like, she has very striking features, and she has a way of darting her eyes that just like cuts through you, and I think really works well for this. And also just her delivery. Her voice is just like, it's kind of like butter, but like she's also your commander, and so she's telling you what to do, and it's great. I do think that there are flashes of the Michael B. Jordan action star hero that I would want in this film, even though I agree with you all that it is generic. I think there's a moment where he kind of gets to be a little bit more playful, where he starts just like, he goes rogue. I mean, it's not a spoiler to say that. He starts going friggin' rogue. And he, at one point, he pretends to be like a bum on the street,
yes,
with a brown paper bag to sort of like get some intel on this guy he's trying to track. And I loved that scene in part because it showed him kind of playing along, not being quite the, you know, straight on action hero, but being able to sort of like go under disguise. And maybe I'm reading a lot into this very short moment, but I was like, oh, like, I wonder if a white actor would be able to do something like that. Like, would they do that in the first place? It's playing into, I think, all of these stereotypes about black men and black men on the street that we might see. But they probably weren't trying to go that deep, because the rest of the movie, like, his race has nothing to do with it. He's just like, oh, my wife was murdered. No, not even just his wife. His pregnant wife was murdered. And now he needs revenge for both her and their daughter, their unborn child. And I'm so tired of these narratives.
Oh my God.
At least with like John Wick, he's really avenging his dog's death and not his wife, because his wife just dies of like an illness. And I'm like, that's different.
Yes.
Right.
Now, I will say, so Michael B. Jordan, I've had many conversations with people who think he's hot because he is, but that he's not a good actor. Huh. I think Killmonger really put that up as a discussion, at least among circles that I roll in, where people are like, he's not good as Killmonger. He's not convincing. And I still believe he was good in that role. I also think that he is at his best when he is playing someone a little bit more vulnerable and less of like going rogue, Liam Neeson type character. I want to see him be charming, but also see him like trying to overcome something insurmountable. And here it's like, we know he's going to be fine because there will be five more movies about this. You know, there are moments here where we see that, but overall, it's not happening for me.
I think also part of his charm is not just that he's charming and good looking. It's that he's hot in the boy next door way. Mm-hmm. That's the lane that he plays in. But I think because we don't often say that as much about non-white actors, like we forget that that's kind of like the type of handsome that he is. Mm-hmm. It's a more approachable, like the sweetest guy on your street did real well after puberty. And you're just like, wow, like he's, you know what I mean? Like he's not like, oh, good God, how did these genes come together? I don't understand. I am blinded by it hot.
Wait, what? Okay, who is unapproachable handsome to you then, Daisy? I don't understand this.
I mean, you have set the bar kind of impossibly high for handsomeness.
No, it's
boy next door hot.
He's definitely boy next door. I will concur
really?
With that.
Where do you both live?
Yeah, I was going to say, what house do you occupy?
Who is next door to you?
They're not the same age, but he does not give off what Idris Elba gives off, for example. They're
exactly.
both charming. But in a very different way, like, you know?
That is interesting, because I would have thought they were, like, just equally...
There comes to a point where it's, like, the temperature at which steel melts versus the temperature at which...
okay,
you know.
When he takes off his shirt, which he does a couple times, thankfully, yes, that's true.
Right.
But I do think that, like, the Idris Elba comparison is good. And I also think that part of the issue is also that we've grown up with him.
Yes.
The first time most of us saw him was as Wallace, where he is, like, 14... and scraggly and very sad.
And heartbreaking.
And then he was a child actor. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it, I think, even harder to sort of make that transition from that to being this dude who has a kid on the way. And then is like, I'm going to avenge my family.
Mm. And I think like when you're more accessible in that way, I think that, you know, kind of that lack of personality in this movie. And again, this seems more like it wasn't necessarily written with this character having a lot of personality. But otherwise, like, yes, like he's buff and all that stuff, but it's not the kind of place that really, I think, plays to those charms and plays to that. Whereas Jodie Turner-Smith, also to go back to what Chris was saying, is like, I did love her. I loved looking at her. I loved that she was there. I mean, I was just really into it. I was into seeing her and not being questioned as a woman in the setting. Like, it was just cool. And she's striking. I mean, I've seen her at like opening night of Shakespeare in the Park. And I was like, I just couldn't stop looking at her from 100 feet away because she is that striking.
I agree that she's very, very striking in this movie. But really, one of my big takeaways from this film was that a good cast is not enough. In a lot of ways, I really watched this movie a little bit as a thought experiment of like, you take a completely generic movie, directed generically, written generically, but put in a great cast. Can that cast make it something more than it is? And I just didn't feel like they did. I mean, you have Brett Gelman, the awful dirtbag brother-in-law from Fleabag, and he's on screen for like 45 seconds. You have Coleman Domingo. You got Coleman Domingo to show up for your movie, and then you give him like two scenes.
Yeah.
Well, and Guy Pearce, who has played this part 400 times, very good actor, but he has done this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we can all say that Without Remorse is probably like a fine Saturday afternoon watch because it's Clancy. It's like it would be airing on TBS or something at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. So tell us what you think about Without Remorse. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it will be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc. Teladoc is here for you with 24/7 access to board-certified doctors who can diagnose and treat non-emergency conditions like sinus infections, allergies, rashes, and more. And Teladoc's doctors can, where authorized, call in a prescription to be filled at the pharmacy of your choice. Download the app today or visit teladoc.com/NPR.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, What's Making Us Happy? Daisy, let's start with you.
Okay. I mentioned on an episode of this show weeks ago that I was underwhelmed with RuPaul's Drag Race season 13. So much so that I stopped watching the season about halfway through because I genuinely found myself in a worse mood after watching episodes than I was when I started. But I'm a completist and I need to know things. So what I have been enjoying in the meantime has been watching recap, I should say watching and listening, recaps from Bob the Drag Queen and Monet Exchange. So they are both former contestants on the show. Bob the Drag Queen won season 8. Monet Exchange was the co-winner of All Stars 4. And they have a show that is, you know, just something they do all the time. It's called Sibling Rivalry. They have just such a funny, great friendship that really feels like they are siblings with the way that they tease and, you know, harass each other. It's really, really fun. They talk about all types of topics. And then once a week, they also do an episode called Sibling Watchery, where they recap the season. So even though I haven't been watching the episodes, I've been listening to the recaps and they've been great. They're really fun and funny because it's so great to listen to two people who have been on the show, who can tell you what it's like to prep for being on that show, what the shooting schedule is actually like when they're doing those confessionals and things like that. And they know how much money it costs to like create costumes for the show. And they just have the best, best rapport. So, but if you want to, you know, kind of know what happened on season 13 without putting yourself through the process of watching an overwrought and too many episodes season with poor editing, then you can just listen to Sibling Watchery with Bob the Drag Queen and Monet Exchange.
Thank you so much for that recommendation, Daisy. Chris, what is making you happy?
Well, this is a bit of a double dip because my podcast and partner, Glenn, has already plugged our show, A Degree Absolute, here. But you all know how quickly things can change in the dog-eat-dog thunderdome of podcasting. So I have some exciting guest announcements. We have already had Alex Cox, the DIY filmmaking legend, the writer-director of Repo Man and many other films, on our show to talk about the book he wrote about The Prisoner. This is the exceptionally weird 1960s cult TV show that is the subject of our podcast. If you like stuff like Twin Peaks or Lost, you might find The Prisoner up your alley. In the coming weeks, we are going to have podcasting luminaries Ben Blacker from the Thrilling Adventure Hour, Jesse Thorne from Bullseye and the whole extended Maximum Funiverse, Matt Gourley from I Was There Too and Super Ego, and Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. So, but great guests are not enough. I think you need a song, you need a theme song with incredibly specific lyrics that disposes with any kind of literary devices and just tells you very clearly what the show's about and who's on it in an earwormy fashion. So with the assistance of my friend Casey Aaron Clark, we made this happen.
They're frequently dumb, but they're sometimes astute. They're always emphatic on a degree absolute. They're breaking The Prisoner right down to the root. That whole TV show on a degree absolute. If you like lava lamps and weather balloons and whack-ass inflections from Patrick McGoon, Chris and Glenn made a podcast especially for you. It's no degree partial. It's a degree absolute.
All right, so that is my friend Casey Aaron Clark and a chorus of other Casey Aarons Clark and her brother Jonathan Clark performing a song that I wrote for our podcast, A Degree Absolute. Check out our upcoming episodes with all those guests, please.
Thank you, Chris. I don't know if that's the first time anyone's played their own theme song on here, but I love it.
Well, you know, shameless self-promotion. It's a Thunderdome, like I said. It's a tough world.
Thank you, Chris. Steven, what is making you happy?
Well, for years, my favorite sports website was Deadspin, a site that managed to mix sports and many, many, many other things that aren't sports into a kind of cocktail of just insight and weirdness and snark and great, great humor. And late in 2019, Deadspin collapsed in on itself, due in large part to a management mandate that the writers, quote unquote, stick to sports, which is something that virtually no readers of Deadspin wanted them to do. And the site finally fell apart. Well, in September 2020, most of the main staff of Deadspin started a new site called Defector. It is subscription-based, so you pay for it. And just being reintroduced to some of my favorite writers, people like David Roth and Drew McGarry, kind of expounding on not only sports, but everything else in the world, has been just a true, true joy. These are some of my favorite writers. They go on at great circuitous length on any number of topics. I'm especially partial to Drew McGarry's Fun Bag, where he just answers random questions from readers. It has become appointment reading, which is good because we're paying for it. But it is so, to me, it is really, really worth the money. Also, Drew McGarry and David Roth host a Defector podcast called The Distraction. And I have to say, I was so distracted by hearing their voices that I'm struggling to get into it. Just more content from these wonderful, wonderful minds has been a great, great joy to me. So that is the website Defector.
Guys, I have to mention this because it would be weird to not mention it, but I executive produced The Distraction.
Oh.
That's one of my shows.
I did not.
Well, Daisy, we do not permit self-promotion on this show, Daisy. So let's cut
it
that.
Because somebody would see it and like think that we were pretending. No, I mean, and Drew and Roth are just as funny and kind as you would hope they would be in real life. They're exactly those guys. And as a huge sports fan myself, I was bummed when we lost Deadspin because it was one of the only great sports sites that also like talk to you like an intelligent person.
Yeah.
And I think especially like if you are a woman or a fan of some kind of other kind of not as treated well background, for lack of a better way to say it, like they're just good guys. They're on the thoughtful side of things. So, but yeah.
Look at all this synergy.
I know.
Ah. Crazy.
You know my imaginary friends.
Yeah.
Well, my happy is a song. It's a couple, few weeks old at this point, but I have been obsessed with it as of late. It is Kiss Me More by Doja Cat and SZA. I know Doja Cat has been problematic, but I don't care. I think she makes bops, and I bop to them. And I just love, it's like kind of a slightly happier and brighter song than SZA usually does, but she's still got that sort of sting to her lyrics and her singing style, which I love. And the video, oh my God, it's like this candy-coated confection in like a sci-fi realm with a really hot model named Alex Landy, who apparently played Nico Kim in Grey's Anatomy. And to me, I just love being able to see like two Black women and then also an Asian man as like the sex object in the music video. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that before. And it just made me really happy because I'm like, I'm all here for interracial attraction. That's not just a white person and then another person of color. Like,
yeah.
give me more of that. So Kiss Me More by Doja Cat and SZA. It is what is making me happy this week. And if you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations exclusive to our newsletter, subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Crafting My Style. You can find Steven at I Dislike Steven. Find Daisy at RunDMR. And you can follow Chris at CT Klemick. You can follow editor Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy and producer Candace Lim at TheCandaceLim. Follow producer Mallory Yu at Mallory_Yu and follow producer Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff. That's KATZIF. Mike's band Hello Come In provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. And thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We'll see you all next week when we will be talking about the Netflix adaptation of Shadow and Bone.
A few years ago, a website popped up in Stockton, California, and conspiracy theories started ramping way up.
And it's being funded by conservative movement underneath the table.
And I was like, oh my gosh, you guys, people really believe this.
What happens when the local news outlet isn't fact-checking conspiracy theories, maybe encouraging them? Listen now from NPR's Invisibilia podcast.